Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's FBC Radio Live, Thursday, May the 4th. And no, I'm not going to make some Star Wars joke, but I guess I just inadvertently brought it up that, you know, people like to celebrate today as Star Wars Day, John. Look, I love the originals. I think some of the content that's come out recently, I just can't keep up with it, to be honest with you, John. Like, it used to be so simple. It just used to be the three movies, you know, great story, one of the greatest trilogies of all time. And now I can't keep up with the lore. I don't understand half of it. I have no idea what I'm watching. I know good friend Michael Craddy could sit here and give me a lesson on everything Star Wars and kind of the intricacies of it. But John, quite frankly, I'm just, you know, I'll celebrate by maybe watching one of the originals today. Maybe I'll do that. That's after I go see Guardians of the Galaxy.
True. Yeah, that seems like you got a pretty exciting day planned. I saw the original Star Wars 25 years after its release. Like, I'm a movie buff, but that's not a genre that I'm really into. Mm-hmm. And Star Wars felt more like a Western in outer space.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And I didn't really even care about seeing the other ones. I mean, my favorite, and I don't even call it a sci-fi film. It's more myth, and it's an epic film, which is just a treat, which is 2001, A Space Odyssey, which is a very, very polarizing film, which 10% of the people that have seen it absolutely love it, put it in their top five, their top 10, which is, I'm one of that 10%. And then like 90% don't get it or hate it or fell asleep during it. So it's really a polarizing film, but it's not a genre that I'm really excited to see. But yeah, may the force be with you. I'll say it.
Yeah. I was going to say, so it's kind of like The English Patient, right? Where some people loved it, others hated it, like Elaine.
Right. I'm with Elaine on that one. And I love Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
One of my favorite actors. Got to see him on Broadway performing Hamlet back in 1995. One of my favorite actors. Quiz show was awesome. He was incredible. And Schindler's List. But no, not a big fan of The English Patient either. I'm with Elaine on that one.
Yeah, I think we can share that opinion. I am, however, because they are... obviously, it's the 40-year anniversary of Return of the Jedi this year, and they are releasing it out into some theaters, especially in this area. Well, in this area in particular, I know around the country. So I do think I am going to partake in that eventually, because I've never seen the originals in theater. I mean, obviously, I was a little bit too young. I was born in 1986. So if I had seen the originals when they came out, I'd have a lot of questions to answer. Let's just put it that way. But even so, I believe they did this before where, you know, whatever it was, the 20-year anniversary or something like that. They probably brought these back, or like when the prequels came out or something, like, I don't know. All I know is at some point they had some of these movies come out back into theaters, and I didn't get a chance to. So I think I'm gonna do that at some point. So I should really get on that, because I know it's a limited engagement affair. So yesterday we talked with our good buddy Jim Behringer. We did a lot of hockey talk yesterday, so we didn't really get a chance to talk about the NBA, and good thing we waited, because yesterday we would have talked about the disappointing end to the Celtics game one against Philadelphia. But fortunately, we waited a day, and now we're going to talk about the 34-point victory and bounce back that they had last night, because you know, I don't know if there is really any concern following the game one loss. You know, I don't think anyone necessarily expected them to sweep this series. But I think losing that game and the 76ers being without Joel Embiid, you're kind of like, uh-oh, what's going to happen? Is this Philadelphia? Well, it didn't really matter. Embiid came back. He was really ineffective yesterday. What did he have? 8 points, something like, I don't even know. I didn't even check this final stat line.
Yeah, 15 points, 15. But it wasn't really a big deal.
Yeah,
three rebounds, you know, five blocks. He was better on defense than he was on offense. He didn't look good. Obviously, he's been out for 2 weeks. He's a huge guy. Just won his first MVP. So, yeah, I mean, it was one of those things, and this is what happens in the NBA. The road team wins game one in exciting fashion. Game two, it's almost like they mail it in, knowing that they got a split on the other team's home court. The Celtics played desperately. They were locked in on defense, played with more force, more poise, and on offense, shared the basketball, and got contributions from everybody. Well, who would think that the Celtics would win by 34 points when Jason Tatum was their seventh leading scorer, only had 7 points in 18 minutes? It speaks to their depth. You obviously want to see Jason Tatum play better than that, but he was in foul trouble for pretty much the entire game, it felt like. So, yeah, but that's the NBA. That's what you see. And as Danny Ainge said many, many times, it's not the Tour de France. It's one game apiece. Philly won by 4. Celtics won by 34. Now it's a best of 5. Philly has home court advantage. I still like the Celtics in this series. They're a better team. They really, really are. I mean, I think I told you, or I may have told Jet Stryer, my co-host on the Pick and Roll NBA podcast with Jet and Staff, which you can hear on Full Press Coverage.
Nice play.
I try my best. I try to be a radio pro. But if you were to draft the players in this series, 7 of the first 11 draftees would be Celtics. And then you go from there. So the Celtics just have a better roster than the Philadelphia 76ers, without question.
Yeah, and I think that was obviously a lot of the confidence going into Game 2. And obviously, yeah, there was concern that, oh, no, maybe Embiid comes back and he's his MVP self. But to your point, I mean, the Celtics are just deeper. And when you really look at Game 1, that was more of a product of they just truly kicked themselves and tripped up on their own feet. And, you know, throwing the fact that James Harden had his highest playoff point total in 7 years. That's not something that's necessarily sustainable. To be honest, what's more sustainable is the Celtics kicking themselves. You know, I expect that to happen at least a couple more times throughout this postseason. Let's just hope that it's scattered across a couple series and then they'll be all right. But, it was an encouraging victory, obviously, last night. Your Los Angeles Lakers, though, John, will be looking to go up 2-0 on the Golden State Warriors. I think we talked about it before the series, and it kind of came true in Game 1. How do you stop a top-of-his-game Anthony Davis? And I don't think the Warriors can. It's just the question is, John, are you going to get that Anthony Davis this entire series? And is there anything Golden State can do to kind of counteract that?
I guess if you can get him for 4 games, that'll be enough because you'll win those 4 games. And look, Anthony Davis, even in the first series against Memphis, was inconsistent. You know, he'd have a 34-point game followed by a 13-point game, followed by a 29-point game, followed by an 11-point game. He's inconsistent when it comes to scoring. He always rebounds. That's never an issue. And he always plays defense. I mean, he has double the blocks of any other player in the postseason so far. He's an elite defensive player. LeBron's kind of filled in the gaps, scoring, rebounding, passing, doing what he always does. And then the other players, you know, 2 or 3 of them step up in a given game, they're going to be tough to beat. But, yeah, I think it's a tough matchup for Golden State. Anthony Davis is locked in. He's healthy. And I think this is one of the scenarios that could happen is the Lakers win the championship, which would be LeBron's 5th, one less than Michael Jordan. So the argument gets even more juicy at that point. But what could happen is Anthony Davis is the finals MVP because he's that good. And Skip Bayless's head explodes at that point because he'll talk about that LeBron needed Anthony Davis to carry him. He needed help. Jordan never needed help. Although, you know, remember John Paxson and Steve Kerr hitting big shots and finals games on multiple occasions, but, you know, Skip sometimes was in a dreamland. But, yeah, Anthony Davis, he's that good. He's really that good. Now, the issue could be that there's only a day between Game 1 and Game 2. So, you know, what kind of Anthony Davis are you going to get tonight? That's a big question mark.
Yeah, and again, I mean, it would be easy if you just knew, right? Just like, oh, okay, all right, we're gonna get
it, right?
All-star, superstar Anthony Davis. Okay, all right, let's just wrap it up. You know, we'll go back. Yep. Golden State will be down 2-0 again, and we'll just go from there. And look, I mean, it's definitely possible. You know, and as I said this to someone else, like I just can't write off Golden State. You know what I mean? Like. And mostly Steph Curry. Like, that's really what it is. It's like, I can't write off Steph Curry. And that's you know, that's kind of the biggest obstacle in sitting here and saying, like, oh, the Lakers have a good opportunity here because, I mean, you kind of got the Golden State on its heels. We saw Sacramento wasn't able to finish the job. And look, there's a lot of, look, Sacramento was young. They were just getting in for the first time in a million years. This Lakers team just won an NBA championship not too long ago, not to mention, obviously, LeBron and company. This team should be able to close out a series that they, if they go up to nothing, you know, they should be able to close it out against Golden State. And I believe, John, is it 19 straight series or 18 straight series when the a LeBron team wins, like, game one, they win the series, something like that. I heard that on SportsCenter this morning. That's something I feel like you would know or would have, like, tattooed on your arm or something.
Well, I'm not big on tattoos, but, you know, I got poster boards up. You know, I don't want to have the guy who cuts out, like, the newspaper headlines and is, like, the serial killer. I don't want to do that either.
No.
We don't want to do that. But with LeBron, normally he gets off to a slow start. Oftentimes they'll lose the first game. It's a feeling out process, and then he goes from there. I mean, remember in 2018, he lost the first two games at TD Garden to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. Then he won four of the next five, and the Cavaliers moved on to the NBA Finals. Yeah, so he sometimes can be a slow starter in these series and then gear up at that point. The key here for the Lakers is game one was in Golden State. If they can somehow steal tonight, they'll be up 2-0 and then go back to L.A. for games 3 and 4. And I agree with you on Golden State. Doesn't Golden State feel a little bit like the 2018 Patriots? Like, they have this championship DNA. Maybe they're not themselves. Maybe they're not overpowering. They didn't have a great regular season, but someone has to knock them off because they're so, so good, so well coached. Remember that playoff? The Chargers were supposed to beat the Patriots. Well, the Chiefs were supposed to beat them, and so were the Rams, and then Tom Brady's hoisting Lombardi number 6. So you still have that feel that Golden State's never out of it. So the Lakers, and again, we see this in the NBA, you win game one on the road, you lay down game two. You don't want to do that, because when you steal back home court advantage, that's great, but that means you still have to win all your home games.
Right.
That's not a guarantee in the postseason. We've seen the Celtics play essentially 500 basketball the last 2 years at home. You know, and the Lakers can lose at home. There's no question about that. Anyone can lose at home. So you got to treat these games as single entities and just try to really take control of the series rather than lay down and let Golden State get back into it. But this is something that the NBA has always had. You know, it's kind of a zigzag theory. You're good in game one, you're not good in game two, and now it's the best of five.
Well, I can tell you this. One team that's really hoping for some home mojo tonight, John, Phoenix Suns.
Mm.
Were we wrong about what we were going to see from the Phoenix? Like, look, there's a lot of reason to get hyped with Kevin Durant going to Phoenix. Now, you know, Chris Paul's banged up. They're down 0-2. They really haven't looked good against what's looking like a much better team. And I mean, Denver is a better team, but you know what I mean. Like, I didn't think they were this much better. I thought certainly Kevin Durant closed a huge gap. But it's been surprising, really, John, that I don't know. Something surprising, and my gut tells me I don't think this is ever going to be a series. I think Denver wins tonight and, you know, for all intents and purposes, ends the series, because no team has ever come back 3-0 in the NBA.
Right, and Phoenix has no depth to begin with, and if they don't have Chris Paul tonight, Campaign's going to start at point guard. He's one of your best guys off the bench. DeAndre Ayton has been horrible in this series. Jokic has just toyed with him. Devin Booker has been great. Durant had a horrible game, too. He was 2 of 12 from 3, which I didn't think was physically possible. It'd be like having a playoff game where Tom Brady threw 4 interceptions. Like, after the game, you'd say, that possibly didn't happen, did it?
Well, yeah, it's just
in the case of Kevin Durant. It's such an anomaly. Like, Kevin Durant, 2 for 12 from 3, that makes no sense. So the problem with Phoenix is they have no depth, because to get Durant, they traded essentially half their roster to get him. Kind of like the way the Celtics traded half their roster and draft picks to get Kevin Garnett back in 2007. The difference is that was done in the offseason, so you tweak your roster going forward. When they got Kevin Durant, Phoenix had really no options other than trying to fill the gaps with, you know, and marginal players
at
best.
And to be honest, John, and I think this is – because if you go back, this – I mean, you can point to the 0-2 Lakers as, like, quote-unquote super team, but that Celtics team was really the first – the one that kind of kick-started this last 15 years or so, a teaming up team, you know, players, get superstars together. And of all the you know, obviously there's an argument for Miami and everything like that for sure – but that might have been the best cohesion of talent. And I think other teams have been desperately trying to recreate that. So, like, yeah, they did that. Those trades did happen, you know, in the offseason, which gave them time. But Garnett, Allen, and Pierce complemented each other so well. I mean, it was like the perfect trio of, like, each did, some, you know what I mean? Each had a very specific role, so to speak, and I think it worked very well. Now, obviously, I think just the sheer talent of LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and then, you know, quote-unquote, throw in Chris Bosh, and you can sit there and say, well, obviously that worked. But you remember, it didn't work right away. This Celtics team went out and won 66 games, John, right off the bat. And, like, you know, they were just right, boom. You know, they went from having one of the worst seasons in franchise history to that what I can't even remember the number of game turnaround that it was, but it was large. So I think since then, everyone's like, okay, if we, you know, it's like get Chris Paul and Kevin Durant and this, or James Harden, Kyrie Irving and this, and it's like, okay, it's great on paper, but it's not as easy as it seems. And like I said, I mean, the first team to do it, really, in this era of just this generation of basketball, I'm not speaking to whatever in the past, that Celtics team really just found that right cohesion. So, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe if this happened for Phoenix in the offseason and they come back and they're at the same point with the same exact players, maybe they're much better off because they've had Kevin Durant and they've had this entire season to gel and find what works for them. Right now, they're kind of lost and getting desperate.
That Celtics team in 2007, when they put those three guys together, they also had Rajon Rondo, who was an emerging second-year point guard. Kendrick Perkins was the perfect center for that team. Didn't look to score. He set picks. He rebounded. He defended. Garnett was such a great defensive player and such a leader. He kind of took control of the locker room. But you also had those three stars at the perfect moment because they'd all had individual accolades. I mean, Garnett had been a league MVP. Pierce and Allen and Garnett all went to multiple All-Stars, and it was like they got together when they were all around 30, 31 years old and said, okay, enough of the individual stuff. Let's win. They got off to a great start. Like you said, they won 66 games. Struggled a little bit in the first two rounds. They had seven games to beat Atlanta, seven games to beat Cleveland. The thing with Phoenix is Chris Paul is just so old, and he's just not durable. And Durant's always hurt, and it did happen in midseason. I think the best super team that I've seen since the Bulls in the 90s would be Golden State with Durant, Steph, and Clay. But the difference there was they had already won a championship. Yeah. You know, so it wasn't like they were coming from nowhere.
Yeah, I'm kind of
lost to the Cavaliers. Yeah. So that's kind of a different thing, right, than saying what the Celtics did.
Yeah,
Celtics,
I'm talking about more teams trying to put something together. Like Brooklyn. Brooklyn tried to put together a big three or
exactly.
You know, that type of thing. So, which,
getting Durant was like piling on. I mean, they were arguably they won 73 games and then they added Kevin Durant.
Yeah. Well, it's like it's like the Bruins going out and getting, like, maybe not Connor McDavid, but maybe Leon Draisaitl, you know, another 50.
Guys.
Yeah,
yeah,
just like,
exactly. Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm not quite over the Bruins thing yet. I'm trying. I'm, you know, every so often it just gets me, but, no, it's not easy to win in any sport, but we're seeing that right now with Phoenix, who, you know, maybe we just took Denver for granted because it's like, well, you know, it was the two-time defending NBA MVP. He will not win his third one, but obviously it doesn't matter. It doesn't take away who Jokic is. Then you have, you know what I mean? And then you get the excitement of Kevin Durant and Phoenix, you know, not too long removed from going to the NBA Finals. But to your point, Chris Paul isn't what he was a couple years ago. He is, you know, he's an older guy. You know what I mean? That's what it is. That's the reality of it. And Kevin Durant is fragile. I mean, really, at any point, I mean, you could be going into game three tonight, and 20 minutes before tip-off, you could get breaking news that Kevin Durant aggravated an Achilles injury. And
fell off his chair in the locker room or something strange, right? He got hurt in warm-up a couple of months ago.
No, exactly. So it's like, I mean,
layup lines.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. It's like that's how, like, talk about hanging on by a thread right now. So, yeah, I look at Denver tonight. I just think they're going to take care of business. I don't think there's going to be much drama in it. It's just going to be kind of cut and dry. Wipe your hands clean, move on, and pretty much close it out in four or five. So, before we go, I mentioned Leon Draisaitl, second player in two nights to score four goals for his team and lose. Edmonton, and this is ultimately going to be what sinks their ship if they want to win a Stanley Cup, is defense. I mean, how can that happen? How can you be so potent offensively and lose a game 6-4? Because you look at Vegas, like, I like Vegas a lot, don't get me wrong. I think Edmonton's a better team. They have more talent, but Vegas, guess what? They won because they know how to win. And, you know, it's incredible to, we've talked about the parallels between the Oilers and the Angels in Major League Baseball a few times. And, you know, I think the difference is that the Oilers have had a moderate amount of success over the last handful of seasons, whereas the Angels have not. But the reality of it is, John, that there's not much difference between the two because they have arguably two of the best players in the sport on the same team, and they just cannot get out of their own way. And now all of a sudden you have the Oilers. Now, again, they went down in the first round series, but I feel like at this point they're playing with fire, and you're you know, it's not going to be, let's put it this way, it's not going to be possible for them to go on and win a Stanley Cup playing the way they are, losing games 6-4, giving up 5 goals, being able to score all this and not be able to win. So exciting games to watch. And sorry, Jim, did not work too well for the Devils last night. They did not show up. Let's hope for them. It's a repeat of their first round series where they go down 0-2 and then just take care of business. But yeah, this Oilers team, it's like I think I'd like to see them win. Certainly, they're the only Canadian team I want to see win that's left. I do not want to see Toronto. But I just, looking at this team, I can't get past the lack of defense and the lack of, well, the ability to do anything but score. So
when teams have had, like, arguably the two best players in the sport, which obviously we can make a case for McDavid, certainly the greatest player in hockey by far, and Dreisaitl's, you know, not too far behind. But when Lemieux was with Jagr, they won cups, right? When Gretzky was with Messier, they won cups. Now, they didn't play on the same line, Gretzky and Messier, because they were both centers. They just had so much talent, it wasn't even fair. I mean, and you mentioned Jari Kurri and Paul Coffey. And, you know, they had, like, probably, you can make a case that Edmonton team had, like, 5 of the top 10 players in the world at that point.
Yeah, easily.
In the 80s. I mean, yeah, but Gretzky and Messier were right there with Lemieux as the three best players in the sport. And yeah, Kurri and Coffey, and not to mention Grant Fuhr and Nett, who oftentimes, I remember the Bruins beat the Edmonton Oilers one game. I think it was 5-3. This is a regular season game. He was ridiculous because they didn't even play defense in front of him. Like a normal goalie would have gave up like 15 goals that night. He was that good. I said, guy gave up 5 goals, but he was incredible.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just like they had like half of the top 10 players in the league. So obviously they were going to win. Then you have Edmonton with, like you said, the two best players in the sport. And we'll see what happens. But is it the structure of the defense, Ian? Is it the talent?
What's
the story with the goaltending? What is it? Is it the forwards aren't good defensively too to help? I don't know. You know a lot more than I do.
I mean, it's a combination of everything. I mean, obviously, you can't, you know, defensive structure, philosophy, ability, and look, I mean, mediocre goaltending. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there's not a lot of great goaltenders in this league. Mm-hmm. There's some pretty good ones, and you get, you know, there's like maybe like 5 or 6 like truly elite, like you can pretty much count on season after season. You have players that goalies that come in, have a great season, have a great little stretch here and there, but for the most part you have a lot of mediocrity in tandems. And I don't mean that insulting. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it could be a combination of more open ice, so more goal scoring, that type of thing. But, you know, there isn't that many Vasilevskis out there, or, you know what I mean, like Marc-Andre Fleury's when he was, you know, during his peak run, or like, you know, some of these other guys. So I think that's a huge disadvantage for a team like Edmonton, who obviously puts a lot into goal scoring. But I mean, their goal scoring isn't a problem. So if they score 4 goals or 5 goals every game, they should win every single game. The problem is they're letting up 5 or letting up 6, and you know, that's the problem. So I think it's a combination of everything. They're not good enough defense talent wise. I don't think they have the right defensive structure to complement what they do offensively. And then, of course, it comes down to goaltending because, well, if you have a better goaltender, a better situation there, then, you know, some of those issues aren't going to be as pronounced.
A difference maker in that, right? And there's just not many of those, like you're saying, right?
Not necessarily a difference maker, but I don't know. It's hard to explain because, like I said, so many teams are going to this tandem.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, you know, maybe it's not necessarily it's. Again, you just don't have it, the era of a goalie playing 65, 70 games. It's just not going to happen anymore. It's just not how the game's played. There's no reason to do that, especially if you have aspirations, unless you're Andrei Vasilevskiy the last couple of years, unless you have, you know, aspirations to go on and win a Stanley Cup. It's just not, doesn't seem feasible in today's game to have that much ice time under your belt before you get to the postseason. So maybe that creates a bit more, I don't know, mediocre play across the board. Like I said, I think this Edmonton team they're very top heavy. Just fortunately for them, that top part is pretty potent, and that's, you know, offense, and that means you can win a lot of games in the regular season, especially. But postseason, that's where it really kind of comes into play because you have to do both things very well, and that's, on a side note, last time I'm going to mention the Bruins, that's one of the reasons why it was so shocking what happened to the Bruins, because they were really good offensively and defensively. They just forgot how to play defense, and guess what? 65 wins out the table. So I think that's where Edmonton is. It doesn't mean they can't come back and beat Vegas, because this isn't the same Vegas team that went to the Cup Final a few years ago. They're still a really good team, don't get me wrong, but Edmonton can still overpower them with offense. It's just, I just feel like to do that for four straight rounds, eventually they're not going to be able to score. Eventually they're going to turn into it. They're going to get a stretch where they just can't put the puck in the net consistently. And that's going to cost them. So maybe it's this round. Maybe it's next. Maybe it's the Stanley Cup final. I don't know.
If you have to win in different fashions in hockey, right? You're playing two opponents if you make it to the finals. And the frustrating thing, and I don't want to bring the Bruins up again, but, you know, there's so many just weird things that happen. They scored 27 goals in that series. If you told me before the series the Bruins are going to score 27 goals and they're going to win 2 of 3 in Florida, I go, okay, that's a 6-game series max, right?
So yeah.
Obviously, because they would have gone to Florida 3 times. Here's the thing. In the third period during the regular season, third period in overtime, they gave up a grand total of 59 goals in 82 games. That's exceptional.
Yeah.
In 7 postseason games in the third period in overtime, they gave up 14 goals.
Yeah.
They gave up 2 goals per game in the postseason just in the third period in overtime alone, while in the regular season it was like 0.75 goals. I mean, that's where it was. They dominated the third period all year, and then they didn't in the postseason. It's just one of the weird things. You could write a book about that series, and it would be – Stephen King could probably write it.
And it was just a horror book, really. It just, I can't do it.
Wes Craven could direct it.
Yeah. And Daniel Day-Lewis could star in it, right? Or is that beneath him? Actually, I don't know if he's, who could he play?
Oh, he'd learn how to skate. He'd be third in the league in scoring on his own.
Yeah.
Like when De Niro trained for Raging Bull,
right.
Like Jake LaMotta was like, I can train this guy to be a top 10 fighter. He's that good, and he's that into the role, which sometimes it does get
so he can play there. Patrice Bergeron then, right, is what you're saying?
Probably, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he played Lincoln.
Oh, right? There you go.
So, you know, why not?
About the same impact on culture.
Yeah,
on
society.
Yeah, on society, right. Anyways, so tomorrow we'll obviously talk about the Lakers maybe losing, maybe winning. Well, no, we'll see. We'll talk about that tonight or tomorrow. The Suns could possibly be in a 3-0 hole. And, of course, if there's any other news, particularly Mercedes Lewis heading to New York to join Aaron Rodgers and the gang with the Jets, we'll talk about that. But until then, have a great Thursday. Have a great day. If you're going to see Guardians of the Galaxy today, enjoy it. I'm going to. So we will talk to you tomorrow. Take care.